Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
A top secret organization erases the identities of attractive young people, turning them into blank dolls, ready for imprints of temporary identities they need to fulfill assignments for clients. Actions have consequences, quite clearly, which is why Resonance Rewind is on the case.
Hello, Echo. How are you feeling?
Did I fall asleep?
For a little while.
They live every life. They have every skill, every experience.
This isn't just about what you want. This is about what you need.
We're talking about people here who have their very rules taken away.
Imagine such a thing.
Dr. Saunders is operating under the radical theory that those people are still people.
People who volunteered for this.
So we're told.
Agent Ballard, you were assigned to case designate Dollhouse over 14 months ago.
After all this, do you think the Dollhouse really exists?
I know it does.
You might not be punished and I might not be alive, but this house will fall.
Do it.
Everything you believe, gone.
We're in the business of using people.
You understand less about this business than you think.
We do not have a client.
We have a mission.
There's nothing real about it. They're programmed. Whose body am I in?
Did I just kill someone?
Asking about it loves humanity.
Every time I look deeper, I find more clients. And a web of financial and political connections all over the world, even inside the FBI.
We have a spy.
Inside the Dollhouse.
The Dollhouse deals in fantasy. That is their business, but that is not their purpose.
Did I just kill someone?
Or should I aim this at her head?
So is it simply a case of a Joe 90 with different live human beings that we're seeing with respect to Joss Whedon's Dollhouse? Well, we're engaging in a different experiment for this Resonance Rewind because we've got somebody who's never, ever seen Dollhouse before. And we'll basically, based on whether she will watch it, presumably on the basis of our discussion as we work our way through the program. The first who's never, ever seen Dollhouse, of course, is Jenny Finch, crime writer extraordinaire based in Tipperary. How are you, Jenny?
I'm fine, Alex. How's everyone there?
Excellent. Well, we're ticking over quite nicely from that point of view, because we also welcome to Resonance Rewind the awesome Victoria Simmons, relative newbie, it has to be said, to Resonance Rewind, but hopefully working your way through it. Last week, of course, we were looking at Joe 90. I think we were relatively kind in terms of where that was going. Phil Learness, who sadly can't be with us today, was not a fan of Joe 90 on the grounds that there was no character there, and the lead character effectively was just a cipher. So, Victoria, what did you make of Ghosts, episode one, of course, of Dollhouse?
I found it really intriguing. I was unsure to start with, but then by the time I got to the end, I thought it left on quite a good cliffhanger. So I was sort of slightly intrigued to watch the next one, but I didn't.
You've got a whole fire on that side of things there. But it's an interesting line for it from that perspective. Jessica Burtis, also in Ireland. So clearly it's the Irish eyes that are smiling today before Jessica heads back to North Carolina. Jessica, any thoughts from yourself as far as Dollhouse was concerned? Effectively, she's just vanished from the face of the whole thing. So let's go back to Victoria whilst Jessica reconnects in the magic of all sorts of other areas. And say, as the program sort of developed, Eliza Dushku, of course, or is it Eliza? I think it's Eliza Dushku, the lead character, who, of course, we see in the opening credit is clearly she's taken this opportunity to have her mind wiped and become part of this organization for which she effectively becomes a cipher. And of course, we then have a cut to her in a massively exciting motorbike chase, etc. And then she's boogieing down to the tunes of Lady Gaga. Sadly, not Victoria Simmons, but never mind. You maybe weren't writing too much music a decade or so ago. But Lady Gaga, Let's Dance, works, or Just Dance, is there. And then, of course, we're into a kidnap scenario. You know, there's a lot of material packed into this 45-minute piece. Jessica, I think, is back with us. Jessica, your thoughts on Dollhouse Episode 1, Ghost?
Yeah, I had never heard of this show before. So I had no idea what to expect. It's very 2009, but I think it's a very fun show. I was really interested in it. I think it's probably a concept that has been used in different ways before. I think that consciousness is such a sci-fi kind of theme, but I think it's really interesting how they did it, where people will have their consciousness altered to become kind of different people for very expensive clients or engagements. And I just thought that seemed really interesting, and in how it's kind of illegal. So I feel like in a lot of things, it's the government that's doing this kind of thing. Whereas in this, it's like a corporation that's trying to keep it secret from the government, which makes it even more interesting, in my opinion, because it's not just some like conglomerate for the for political reasons. It's a secret thing. So but yeah, it was not what I was expecting at all. It ended up being much more interesting than I had originally thought it would be. So I actually want to watch the rest of the show.
Well, there were two seasons worth of Dollhouse, and you're referring, of course, to the organization headed up, it was seen, by Olivia Williams' character of Adele DeWitt. And of course, we see the investigator Paul Ballard, played by Talmo Paniket, who's clearly keen to find out about Dollhouse, even though his superiors, who obviously are working, presumably as part of the FBI, are basically saying, no, you shouldn't get involved with that side of things there. Jenny, from what you've heard so far, is this something you're likely to be checking out on Amazon in the not too distant future? Or is it a case of, no, I've still got my novel in hand about the finite nature of memory, that actually there's only a finite amount of memory before we actually lose it, and we literally just lose that memories completely?
I don't like to make any harsh judgments without actually seeing it. I must say, yes, it is of its time from the sound of it, and it is a little bit what I read about it quickly. It's nice, attractive young women being used as ciphers, and I must say I find that slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting perspective, that, you know, probably Joss Whedon, who has had one or two challenges himself recently with respect to obviously his halcyon days of being the director of Avengers Assemble, and before that, of course, he gave the world Firefly, a much beloved single season, plus of course Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and of course Angel. And we do see some alumni from the House of Whedon actually here, the lead character of course being one of them, Eliza Dushku. We also see Amy Acker as the Doctor in there. But Victoria, what about Jenny's comment there that, you know, maybe there's something here which is just a little bit awkward in terms of you're looking at beautiful people who basically have their minds wiped, who effectively are at a whim to their clients, whatever they happen to be involved with?
Well, they are beautiful people, but then it's TV and Hollywood, so it's inevitably going to be sort of beautiful people. But I was really interested in when they seem to have their memory wiped, but there's an element that that stays, so that they know that their minds are being wiped and they seem to be okay with it. Even though when she started, she did say, well, I don't have a choice. It looks like I don't have a choice in joining up in this team. So she obviously knew something beforehand. And my interest is actually, where are the memories coming from? Are these people that were wiped and then died, or just taken? I'm not entirely sure about that. Maybe you find that out later on.
Well, it's an interesting take on what we were looking at last week, which is obviously the children's series Joe 90, in which the brain patterns of individuals were effectively foisted on the 9-year-old Joe McLean, who effectively would become either a top truck driver or indeed a colonel in the episode Colonel McClane that we actually saw. And I'm just intrigued. I don't think I've ever seen anything where Joss Whedon has admitted that Dollhouse was influenced by Joe 90, but surely the fact that you're dealing with marionettes, dolls in their own way, and you're calling the place Dollhouse, maybe there's a connection there, you know, in terms of the way forward. Jessica, any thoughts from yourself?
Look up a bit of like an explanation for the episode just to like make sure I was understanding what was going on, and it took it to mean that Echo is a bit of an anomaly in that she's not supposed to be remembering what's happening, but those spikes that keep occurring, it's like it's an accident. They're not supposed to do that, so there's something about her brain that is allowing her to remember, and she is not this tabula rasa that they think she's supposed to be, which is interesting because she what makes her remember But yeah, I think that whole ethical component of it is probably why, I guess, well, I don't know why the government's trying to shut it down, but it does make a really interesting scenario because it's like they're running from the government, so like you're supposed to be rooting, I guess, for them to kind of like manage to get away, but at the same time they're like this highly questionable company. And I think at some point when she was talking about how the memories of one of the people who Echo had in her mind for this, like amalgam, came from a woman who ended up committing suicide, and that like brought up so it's like, oh, are these memories ethically like consensually given, or were they taken? So I think, yeah, if that's something that's like discussed later in the show, how they get those memories, and if the people giving them were like giving consent, kind of like maybe it's like giving your body to science. I don't know. So I know it's interesting. I want to know.
The line that was put forward, when you see somebody running fast, are they running to something or are they running away from something? It's a question that we again echoes, no pun intended, throughout the whole thing. Again, I think it's interesting that the other character that we actually see portrayed, who Echo effectively sees undergoing presumably some kind of treatment, is referred to as Sierra. And we do, of course, have that final sequence where they're all tucked away, put in their little boxes again, and left within that. Although, as you rightly said, Jessica, the line of Echo that even with a blank slate, you can clean the slate, but there's still aspects that still remain and still actually work within that process. So let's talk about the next stage of the plot because it moves, as I say, fairly rapidly from this. A birthday party from when clearly Echo wraps up her sequence. She goes back literally to the agency. She's being looked after by her handler, who again has his own sort of approach to the whole thing. Of course, the classic line, "Did I fall asleep just for a little while? Is it time for my treatment?" and so on. Lines which almost become catchphrases as the series develop within that. Victoria, did you feel it was a bit of a jar? Because suddenly we move from there where you'd say, yeah, okay, this is basically just a rich person's toy, shall we say, that's used from that point of view, to suddenly we have another persona, the persona of Eleanor, who effectively becomes a hostage negotiator for the 12-year-old Davina Cristejo, who's been kidnapped. And of course, her father, who is indeed saying he wants a negotiator, not Rambo.
Well, it does jar, but that's kind of the point, I suppose, because she's suddenly changing into a completely different person. So you have to change completely in your storyline. There's sort of that added cut between both of them. I would point out with the memories, I at the end somewhere you see her, she oversees somebody in pain. And I'm wondering actually whether that was the memory taking, but that was previously. But yes, it did jar.
Yeah, it echoes that. And of course, the notion that the new character, of course, of Miss Eleanor, not Miss Ellie, because she's a proper negotiator, she effectively has had her neural pathways jarred with so that she's not only asthmatic, but she also has myopia. They basically scrambled the neural pathways so she sees that. I mean, again, Jessica, you might well say, well, surely when we're playing with dolls or action figures or whatever, you like to handicap folk. Is that a sort of sense of the great maker at work, or is it a case of why didn't they just actually program her to be a superhero or somebody?
I mean, yeah, whenever they were like, oh, she can't see without her glasses, I was just like, I wear very strong contacts. And I was like, if somebody could make my eyesight really perfect for some mission, that'd be fantastic. I don't know why they would keep my eyesight the way it is. So that is kind of funny that they were like, oh, it Topher, the guy who's kind of the mad scientist who does the, he looks like he's in a frat and he's just like pressing keyboard buttons. And he does all the experiments. Yeah, why he would decide to do that. And he was like, oh, it's like part of the amalgam. But yeah, that was interesting because I feel like it fits the theme of kind of rich people using the bodies of like these actives, these agents, and kind of just having fun with them and like getting to be like, oh, I want her to wear glasses and I want it to be consistent. So give her asthma. That's more interesting. I think that sounds very realistic to what would happen.
And in many ways, what you've described there is presumably the divine presence of the author, because Jenny, when you're writing Alex Hastings novels and so on, you're putting together character plots, you're working those things through. Is that a weight of responsibility you feel on how the character of Alex Hastings develops or is perceived, or is it just a case of, what the hey, it sounds good, so let's run with this?
No, the character development is central to most of what I write. And I try to be responsible with it. I mean, I know Alex isn't a real person, never has been.
I know, I've said that for years. I don't know why I exist, but still.
Well,
Alex Hastings, just to clarify, people, I'm sure Victoria said, I knew he was just a cipher.
I'm sorry, I made him up and I've inflicted him on you. I'm so sorry, people. No, Alex Hastings doesn't exist, but some of the things she says and does, I have to take some responsibility for. So I think the way you present people's actions is very important. And I think you have to take responsibility for the way people perceive what you do and what these characters do. And sometimes you look at something and you go, that's just nasty. And you have to put your hand up and go, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Maybe sometimes. Maybe that's a very serious way of looking at it. I'm sorry.
It's a meta-narrative. Victoria, we'll come to you next, because we're going to honour you as we are in, I think, the 151st edition of Resonance Rewind with something we've only actually featured before with Pamela Sue Mann, in which we've got an original piece of music coming into play from yourself. And I just thought it might be worthwhile sharing Still a Long Way to Go, and how that relates obviously to your own involvement and of course the connection with respect to Alzheimer's, etc.
Oh, Last Dance in the Rain, you mean, Alex? Honestly,
Last Dance in the Rain, sorry. You see, obviously it's in, is it Still a Long Way to Go, is it Last Dance in the Rain? Which one would you like?
You did, but you can plug both of them, it's fine, I don't mind. No, that one is the memory generally being taken away from someone and your personality changing. But it can also be taken as was my experience of having it taken, but it's slowly coming back. So I think in here also you have both of them, somebody's mind being taken and then given to someone, and it increases because she's only, when she meets, I don't remember his name, the bald-headed man that was the intimidator when she was a little girl,
the person that basically she is reminded
of, so it triggered a memory.
He's
so it's been just given, but it's then got increased by seeing things, hearing things, which is what happens if you lose your memory.
And it was a trigger because clearly he saw, and indeed Greg Collins, who's the actor who is cited as playing older man, and the man who clearly was the abductor and abuser of the pattern, or the one of the characteristics of the hostage negotiator that we actually see, that again triggers off that whole sequence. At least we can at least say there was a kind of happy ending insofar as at least the end of this particular episode is concerned. But maybe not for Echo herself, or whomever the character of Echo happens to be. Nevertheless, you know, let's have a listen to which one would you prefer? Well, shall we go for the rain one?
Yeah, that's Last Dance in the Rain, the rain one.
I can't know.
There we have it. Victoria Simmons' music of Last Dance in the Rain, as we like to say, the rain one. We're round to characters. Jessica, would you like to share with us your favourite characters for this first episode of the two-season scenario? Of course, Dollhouse. Who would you actually go for? Is it Topher Brink, played by Fran Kranz? Is it Paul Ballard, played by Tamo Pennicott? Is it Echo herself? Over to you.
I actually found quite a lot of the characters to be very compelling, I think because they felt so different and they even disagreed with each other within this episode alone, which is good to see. But I think he was only on the screen for like 2 minutes, but it was like the dude in the bar who got confronted by one of the government agents, and he was just like goofy. He had a gun to his head and he was just like telling jokes. And I want to know who he is because he seemed really interesting. I think he was super funny.
Anton Lubov is the character, played by Enver Djokaj. Again, I think probably sowing the seeds of future areas or plot lines that can be developed within that. Clearly, he will have been a customer, or we presume he was a customer of the Dollhouse, hence the reason Paul Ballard was interested in it. Of course, we had that wonderful metaphor of how Ballard, when he's actually being grilled by his superiors about why he shouldn't be involved with this, effectively is persistently being knocked down in a boxing match whilst he continue actually gets up and keeps working on that basis. But yeah, an interesting choice in terms of that. And I think well sort of identified from that. Maybe an honourable mention. Any honourable mentions you've got, Jessica?
I think Topher. Like, I wanted to know, I mean, Miss Penn was fantastic. But I am curious about Topher and how in the world he got involved in this scenario and his views. It had a lot of philosophical views he was talking about, seeing himself as a humanitarian and things like that while dealing with these memories. So I think his like psychological character is super interesting.
As he says, he can create amalgams of those personalities, pieces from here or there. It's not a greatest hits, it's a whole person. Achievement is balanced by faults, by a lack. Can't have one without the other. Everyone who excels, and this I think was a particularly interesting quote, everyone who excels is overcompensating, running from something, hiding from something. Victoria, characters from yourself.
I actually liked the, what did you call him? The companion, Boyd.
The handler.
Yeah, the handler. There you go. I found that he was very good at his job with Holt, caring for her, but somehow there's this question in his mind, should we really be doing this? And yeah, he's still doing it. So where I'd like to know where that's leading. And actually, I didn't like the mad scientist. I just wanted to hit him in the face.
Yeah. I must admit, Victoria, yeah, there were moments where you tended to think, yeah, he's doing it, but has he ever asked the question, ought he to do it? He has the technology.
I think that it's a game, and it's like when you're playing on any kind of console game and you get to create your character, like in The Sims, or because it is a sim world, an avatar or something like that, like when you can decide they have glasses or have asthma.
It's interesting that one of the reviews that was up on Facebook, the concluding thing was he gave Dollhouse a fair chance, sat through the pilot, didn't look elsewhere. If he was watching it on television, he probably would have turned it off halfway. The concept on paper looks good, but in execution, it's horrendous. How can you relate to a character with no personality and be interested in a plot that's only interesting in its setup phase? Each episode dealing with a small story of Dushko's character, then effectively moving on to being like any other crime show, which I think is harsh, but again, echoing, no pun intended, Phil Linus last week and his concerns over Joe 90, I think there were areas there that kind of maybe were a little bit problematic. Jessica has quite rightly said she doesn't necessarily say that Topher is somebody she should have a coffee with on a regular basis, or indeed even a cup of sweet tea. But, you know, as an intriguing character, it would work on that basis. So how's it going, Jenny? I mean, is this tipping you towards the notion of, well, you know, it's a Thursday or Friday evening, maybe I shall like to just, you know, access this Joss Whedon little series?
I have to be honest, probably not. It doesn't particularly attract me, but also out here, our Wi-Fi is so patchy, it would probably take me 4 or 5 hours to actually get to see it.
It's not the same if you have a cursor going round and round on a regular basis.
It's not the same. We have very, very little access to a lot of downloads or streaming or anything like that out here, although they are promising that we will actually have a cable and I can have a landline phone as well very soon. They said probably by 2025 or 26.
See, there we are. The progress of life in Tipperary. Jessica, that's just lucky you're spending time in Dublin as opposed to other parts of Ireland. Otherwise, who knows what could have actually happened from that perspective. Any other sort of little highlights before we start going into scores that we'd like to share? I mean, any thoughts about the music, Victoria, or the challenge that we get there? Because, again, interesting, we'll have the theme music with lyrics in a few moments to sort of see us out. But did you feel as though there was an ethereal notion to the music that was actually there? Did you feel it was over-emphasising key points? What were your general thoughts on the music?
Well, Joe 90, I said that there wasn't enough. And this one, I think it was fine. Some bits may have gone tad over, but no, I liked the music for this one.
Well, as I say, we did also have the uncredited Lady Gaga number, which we worked through from that perspective. And in terms of the actual score for the music, it was Michael Danner and Rob Simonson, who effectively were involved with that side of things, etc. OK, well, we've reached the stage where we need to actually start quantifying that qualitative. So, Victoria, would you like to give your score? I'll give you a first up for this one.
I'd like Jessica to give hers first.
Wow. I thought, okay. Got that privilege then. You've got Shepparton or indeed south of France passing over to North Carolina or Dublin. Jessica, your thoughts?
Oh, now I'm nervous. I think the first episode had like material that was very heavy and very dark and would definitely need like, I feel like if somebody were to watch it, just like, oh, a fun, like, happy show. It gets a little very dark with the subject material. But I would, like, kind of skimmed ahead, like, looking, reading descriptions of other episodes. And I'm really interested in some of the scenarios and, like, how somebody with, like, consciousness, like, how should we deal with this? And some of them just seem really different. They're all, like, super different scenarios, it seems like, for every episode. So I think I want to give the rest of it a chance. But I'm giving it a 6.5 for now. I think it's an interesting start, and I wanna see where it goes.
For similar reasons, I'm probably going to go for a similar score to what I had for Joe 90 and Colonel McLean, which would be a 7 for me. I don't think it's by any means a perfect opener. I think it sets up a number of key things. I take on board Jenny's point that, hang on a minute here, we are actually looking at women being manipulated by male clients, although in essence you could say that Olivia Williams' character, which I think is worth knowing, and Mr. Witt, you could say she's simply some kind of madame character of this whole list of folk that we actually there. We do have male doll operatives as well, or indeed actives, as they're told, but I'll stick with that 7. So what about yourself, Victoria? Where are you going to go?
I was actually going for 7.5, simply because it took a while to understand the plot line for me. And once I'd got to the end, I understood what was going on. And I thought, okay, the next one might actually, like Jessica was saying, there was interesting plot lines afterwards. So I thought maybe it will actually end up being an 8, 8.5 once you've got into understanding how it all mentally works. Mm.
Yeah, interesting. Because
with Joe 90, it was very simple. And then this one's really complicated.
And still dealing with brain patterns. But for those folk who actually prefer the science fiction dark, it has to be revealed, the next episode of Resonance Rewind will be focusing on a show which, for the first time, features an awful lot of profanity. Yes, there will be profanity, not actually during Resonance Rewind, but certainly in the episode itself. It's the opening sequence of the DC Universe's dark scenarios. We're going down the line of Doom Patrol, in which you have a character in a wheelchair, a range of superheroic souls living in a mansion just outside of a city-based thing. Indeed, it's the show, or indeed the original comic book, that inspired Jack Kirby and Stan Lee with their X-Men for Marvel, but a much darker version with, as I say, Resonance Rewind exploring the joys or indeed stresses and strains of Doom Patrol. For the moment, whilst we acknowledge that Phil Lynas couldn't be with us today because he went to Disneyland and found it too exhausting. Yeah, I shall say that again. He would all be here, but he was exhausted by Disneyland. Somehow I feel as though, you know, the pace must have been off from that sort of point of view. Pamela Suman obviously prepping for another edition of New York Real Talk. So for the moment, to Jessica Burtis and to Victoria Simmons, huge thanks. And Jenny Finch, thank you for joining us. Your first ever Resonance Rewind. Another book of the month in the offering in the near future, no doubt.
Absolutely. I'll get the script off to you and we can go with that. Thank you.
And for the benefit of people who still want to actually access Book of the Month, which isn't necessarily a regular Siren Radio, but you can find it on our podcast companion, etc. It's Val McDermott's Skeleton Road.
The Skeleton Road, yeah.
There we have it. As we said, keep on resonating.
Dr. Niles Calder. Please nod your head if you can understand me.
So what is this place?
My home. A safe place for you others like you to heal. Cliff Steele, Larry Traynor. I thought he might help you with your recovery.
What's your story?
I can't control this thing inside of me. I flew airplanes.
Hold on, there's something up here.
You promised things would change after we moved here. You said there'd be no more late night beers with the guys.
I'm really scared, Cheryl.
Used to do this.
Crash and die, babe.
I love you too, honey.
Around and around. That's it?
I don't know what happened to us. I don't know if you even care how sorry I am. No!
Seeing your daughter, that's good. Just the inspiration you need.
Rita Farr, actress from the 50s.
You were in the movies?
Pictures.
Get rid of it.
But the crew, they adore him.
Then put his name on the marquee.
Get rid of it.
I want to speak to Jane.
Jane's not here, you sissy little pig.
She's in a mood.
Which one of her is in a mood?
Jen is on. I've got 64 personalities. A group of creepy scientists did terrible things to an innocent girl.
Don't touch me.
Oh, please touch me. Do you remember what it felt like?
What?
To be normal.
I'm working with some fascinating people. Each one of them is just bursting with potential. Like you, Vic.
Every person I save is me fulfilling a pledge to my mom that she'll never get to hear.
Father and I already discussed it.
Trying to make her proud. Knowing I'm the reason she's not around to see. This is bull!
Morden.
I haven't been Mr. Morden since... Ah! No! Help me!
The mind is the limit!
I'm nobody.
I've been admiring those freaks of yours for quite some time.
Are we really the best people to hunt a supervillain?
Hell no.
You're all at my mercy.
This isn't real.
No matter how hard I hit, where I hit, what I hit, I can't feel pain.
You're as afraid as the rest of us.
You're kidding me!
This is what the world looks like when we try to live in it.
We don't have to get involved. Especially if we make things worse. I want to go home.
We can do that.
I don't even know what to hope for.
I'm powerless. I have no clue how to fix this.
Hey, Dad.
This mission you're on is your mission.
Every criminal we bust, every person we save is us.
Chief said his enemies were coming for him.
Don't worry. We got this.
Now comes their reckoning!
What do you want from me?
Yes! I am ready, Father!
Holy! Holy! Holy!
I got the point!
Don't you dare hurt them.
They are quite doomed.
Thank God that's solved, Mint Juleps.
Thank you.
we share now, babe.